Broken Ice Makers, and What Are You Doing Lately, up next on the Handy Guys Podcast.
Welcome to the Handy Guys Podcast, a podcast for handy guys from handy guys. Here are the handy guys themselves, Brian and Paul.
So, Brian, we received a question recently.
Yes.
About an ice maker.
We did.
My ice maker sort of works, but not completely.
Okay.
It doesn't do the crushed ice. It just does regular ice.
Right. Well, this particular listener, fan, whatever, asked a question about our ice maker. She didn't go into much detail, so we'll have to speculate.
Okay.
You know, I know of one common problem that I've run across before, and we'll talk about what your problem is as well. But why don't you give out our contact information?
Okay. You can always reach us at our website, handyguyspodcast.com. You'll see a contact link at the top. You can fill out the form there and send in your question or comment, or you could comment right on our website under our posts, or you can email us at us@handyguyspodcast.com. You can find us on Twitter. We are Handy Guys, right, on Twitter?
That's right. We're Handy Guys on Twitter, and we're facebook.com/thehandyguys.
Right. Okay, there you have it. Now, Brian, why don't you read the question we got about the general question about ice makers.
Okay. Well, Mary contacted us, and she gushed about us at the beginning of her email about how much the podcast made her repair so easy, and about her Kenmore dishwasher and how we saved her all kinds of money because she watched our videos. So that was really cool. Thanks for the kudos, Mary. And then she wrote, do you have any recommendations on getting the ice machine on our Kenmore side-by-side working again? Okay.
All right. So
more information needed, Mary.
Yeah, exactly.
And we'll follow up with you on email, and we'll help you get to the bottom of this.
We would need to know, first of all, who's made that dish, the refrigerator.
She says Kenmore. Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
But it's who's making it for Kenmore? Because as you know, Brian, sometimes it's a Whirlpool. Sometimes it's somebody on Maytag.
Maytag isn't that the Sears brand?
No.
No, you're right. I'm sorry.
Kenmore is the Sears brand. And Whirlpool is the one that also makes KitchenAid, and I forget the other one. And then Maytag is another competitor. We'll need to know
also what the problem is. What is it? Is it not dispensing?
Right.
Is it not making ice? Is it the ice cube's too small, or the ice cube,
So there's several functions, right, in the ice maker. So you have the big box that collects the ice. Then you have, what is it, like an auger that goes down the middle. And you have
indoor dispenser, right.
Yeah. Yep. You have a tray which fills up with water and then freezes and then heats up briefly, and then it turns over and the ice falls out.
Yeah, I don't even know if that tray heats up, actually.
On some of the models, I've seen it where it does that, just enough to loosen it so that they fall out.
Fall out easier.
Yeah. But I'm sure each manufacturer does it a little differently, right?
Yep. Well, the biggest problem that I've seen is an easy one to fix, kind of an easy one,
right?
Is the little, the symptom is I'm getting really small ice cubes, or I'm not getting any ice out at all.
Right.
So what happens is the little fill valve, so to speak, the little hose where the water comes out to fill in the tray, mm-hmm. where it makes it makes the ice before it, and then the ice freezes and it pushes it into mm-hmm. the container. That can get frozen.
Now, is that fill valve inside with the ice unit, or is it on the back of the refrigerator?
It's inside. It's in the freezer. So that's, imagine a little hose where you're, constantly running some water every time you use the ice, right? Eventually that can build up with ice.
Yeah.
And the defrost cycle of the freezer is supposed to take care of that. So it defrosts it and, it doesn't, but that may not do it. So someone told me once, just take everything out of your freezer and put it into a cooler and then let your freezer come to room temperature.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of a pain in the butt, but that would work. It kind of everything melts and it loosens, and then you start it back up and you're good to go. So that's kind of an easy fix. Or if you can figure out where it's frosted up, take a hairdryer.
and
warm it up, and things may start moving again.
Now, you could also have a problem with the hose being kinked or being clogged or
Getting water, you know, like the supply line that comes in is not working. You could have a mechanical problem because there's a little motor that has that arm that turns to flip the cubes out into the tray.
So you're going to have to do some investigation to see if the tray is getting water, to see if there's ice in it. Maybe it's just not getting past that stage. It's not turning the tray over, or it's not running through the cycle.
And then there's also a little arm that lifts up and down that's up when the tray is full and then down when it needs to make ice. Mm-hmm. It switches it on and off.
It can get stuck up or...
Right. So, Mary, you know, that's the first obvious thing to check is make sure that little arm is in the up position. In the down position, meaning it needs to make ice. Yeah. If it's stuck up, just push it down.
You don't want a stuck up arm.
Right. You want a stuck down arm. No, you don't want it stuck at all.
Right.
So make sure that arm is in the make ice position and not in the full position.
Now, ours has been the whole tray mechanism itself has the auger part on it, has the part that crushes the ice, and the part, the auger that actually pushes the ice out when you want it because it comes out the front of the door.
Right.
And that feature itself has been busted because somebody tried to jam the thing back in the refrigerator because it didn't go in right, and they broke part of the tray and the whole mechanism that crushes the ice. That's why I have no crushed ice. And it looks like I just need to replace the part. However, when I looked up the part and saw how expensive it was, I just said, oh, well, no more crushed ice.
Yeah, sometimes they'll get you on these parts, especially common parts.
Exactly. I don't remember exactly what it was, but it wasn't $10, $20, $40, $50. It was more like $100, $150, something like that.
Yeah, maybe 80. Sometimes, yeah, so... You know, you got to say, well, what's my crushed ice worth
right.
to me, right?
Do you really ever need crushed ice?
You know, I like crushed ice in my iced tea if I'm making iced tea.
Yeah.
It's, I don't know. It just seems to cool the drink faster.
Yeah, I guess it does, but I can certainly live without it and have the money in my pocket.
Sure.
So, all right. So that would be the other thing. If you just have a failure in part, then you're going to have to identify what it is.
What part it is. And then, you know, Sears has a pretty good website for looking up those parts that you need. You'll have a big, long model number with a dot in it. It'll be like
inside your door.
You know, 1, 2, 3, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. And you type that into the Sears Parts Finder website and away you go.
Now, we've had some people ask us about where to get Sears parts for their – and I think it's just searspartsdirect.com. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let Google do your
– Excuse me, Paul. It's www3.sears.com.
Or you can just go
type
to Sears.
Type that in, Sears. www3.
You can go also to searspartsdirect.com.
See if I was right on that website. They may have changed it. Type in www and then the number 3.
www3.sears.com does not work. It is searspartsdirect.com. Okay.
It used to be that. Right. So they've come into the into the 20th century.
And then if you want the manual they send you to another site. It's a little bit weird, but for basic parts, you can usually get what you want there. Now, obviously, if it's not a Sears or a Kenmore manufacturer for this, they did say it was on this particular question, but for our other listeners, you'll have to go to your manufacturer's site and see if you can find parts. You can also look at some of the other appliancerepair.com, and some of those other appliance sites that you'll find on the internet. Yeah. And we've talked about in the past. So there you have it. So look for, try that. I like that. I've tried that, Brian, now that you mentioned it on my old refrigerator. This is about 10 years ago with a fill valve, and that fixed it for
me. Right. I've also had the arm defrosting it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep. And I've also had the arm getting stick as well,
Getting
the arm stuck up. I forget how I fixed that other than
you just push it down.
Maybe there was some frost on the arm somewhere.
Right. Or you get an errant ice cube that didn't come out all the way and it just holds
that
it up.
That too.
Yep.
All right, up next, what are you doing lately?
What are you doing lately?
So, Brian, I want to know, what are you doing lately?
Well, Paul, I finally got around to aerating and overseeding last weekend.
Oh, you didn't borrow my aerator?
No, I did not use the John Deere tow-behind aerator.
Okay.
You know, as you know, I've got some sort of tight areas around the steps coming off the back of the house.
It wouldn't have worked well for that.
Wouldn't have worked well for that. And also, I've got a steep hill in the front and, you know, getting around the vent for the or the clean out for the sewer line and around the mailbox and between the sidewalk and the curb. I said, you know what? I'm just going to rent. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to rent one. I could have done the bulk main areas with the tow behind and then filled in with the walk behind, but I figured I'll just do the whole thing with the walk behind. And then I wanted to get some grass seed, and I want to try to get Kentucky bluegrass established, because I've read some good things about the properties of it, and it's good for sunny areas.
Right.
It spreads out, which some seeds don't spread. They grow from seed, so I wanted something that would spread. You know how hard it is, or it was, to find Kentucky bluegrass? By itself, a blend.
All the mixtures around here, even the ones that are mostly Kentucky bluegrass, have rye and other things.
They have rye and fescues in them. So the most I could find at
60%
a few places,
maybe?
30%.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. So I finally did find a blend of different varieties of bluegrass at one of the home centers. And so that's what I used. So my process was I aerated, you know, one direction and then the other direction. And then I spread the seed at the recommended overseeding rate. And then I aerated again, because the aerator has a roller, a weighted roller on the front. So that helped kind of press that seed into the holes and, you know, and press the plugs down in and kind of lock that seed in place, which is important with Kentucky bluegrass.
Right. Absolutely. It's harder to get Kentucky bluegrass going than, say, rye.
It takes about 2 weeks for it to germinate.
Yep.
And you've got to keep it moist for that entire 2 weeks.
All right. I have some comments then on this.
Okay. Go ahead. And then ask me if I ran into any challenges.
Well, first of all, how did you get the aerator? Did you take it, you pick it up in your truck?
I did.
How did you get it into the bed of the truck?
At the rental store, the guy working there helped me, and the two of us got on it, and we lifted it into the back of the truck.
Pretty heavy. Oh, it has the weights. Did it have the weights that you can take off?
Yeah,
of
we
it?
Took out
okay.
the weights.
And it's still pretty heavy.
Yeah.
And then how did you get it off the truck?
I have ramps.
Oh, okay.
So that I used to put the tractor or whatever in the back of the truck. So I was able to wheel it down the ramps myself, and then getting it up the ramps was a little harder because because the wheel, you know, it propels itself with that front big roller.
Yeah.
And so it was sliding on those ramps.
Nice.
And then this morning I had to take it back to the rental store. It was due, first thing in the morning this morning. And so I got there before they opened, and it was raining and everything. And, you know, and I'm in my Allen Edmonds shoes and my, Brooks Brothers dress shirt and all of that, and unloading the aerator from my truck because none of the employees were there yet. But I had the ramps and I pulled it off, and then.
Cool. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Because that's not an easy task.
No, it was not.
All right. So the other thing is the bluegrass. Now, I'm a no turf expert. But one of the reasons you don't find all bluegrass is because a couple of reasons. One is, at least around here, it's hard to germinate that bluegrass. So a lot of times they'll add in other mixtures with like rye to get it going, and then the bluegrass comes up later. The other thing is, and my concern is about all bluegrass, is that it's less disease tolerant. Because you don't have a variety of mixtures. So if you get something that goes after that, you're
that's right.
You're toast.
That's one of the concerns of having all one species of any kind of grass. Right. So what they do is you don't buy just, you know, this one variety of seed.
Right.
So I actually got a blend of different bluegrasses that have different characteristics as far as susceptibility to disease, and you know, one's a little better drought resistance, but it maybe doesn't have as good of color or something like that. So there's always a trade-off, right? So this one had three different kinds of, or three different varieties of Kentucky bluegrass. So hopefully they wouldn't get, you know, all of them get the same disease if a disease struck.
Your overseeding, was your current grass bluegrass?
It was a blend. So there was some Kentucky bluegrass and there was some fescue and whatever else in there. I have no idea what, you know, I can't look at the
My problem is I've got like 80% bluegrass and then I have these clumps of tall fescue that have come up all over the place because of the previous homeowner didn't water the new turf that they had installed.
Yeah, yeah.
And unless I go around digging it all up, it's, you know, that it's going to continue. And it looks like I'm almost like a weed. So I feel like I'd rather just have a mixture anyway. So since I've been overseeding, I'm putting down rye and bluegrass.
And probably some fescue in there.
There might be. Not tall fescue, though, because that definitely looks completely different. It's very drought tolerant, but it doesn't blend in well with the bluegrass.
Well, what I realized, you know, when you're going to overseed and aerate, you're supposed to mow your lawn really low. That high, I knew I had in the back where I hadn't been taking as good a care of it, I knew I had some weeds.
Right.
And I had some really funky, weird, creepy looking weeds back there.
I know. I was pulling some when I was over there. It's the same thing I had, and I pulled most of that by hand.
Well, that's what I ended up doing. I mowed it really low. Well, that showed the crabgrass.
Yeah.
Because the crabgrass, you know, creeps along the ground and blocks out the other grasses.
Yeah.
And so it was really evident that I had quite an infestation of crabgrass.
You had crabgrass, but you also had that other stuff that kind of would spider out. I don't know what it was. There's some weird new weed going around this year.
Yeah. I mean, I'm talking like it looked like a pink stalk that was I'll have to look it up.
Yeah, I've been meaning to as well.
And it's, you know, maybe the size of your finger. I mean, it gets fat around like a waxy sort of stalk. And it spreads around. And it's really it's creepy looking.
All right. Well,
so I don't know what that was, but I pulled it all out and I pulled a lot of that fescue out. I filled the entire back of my pickup truck with weeds and grass clippings.
Where'd you take it?
I drove cross country through the field behind my house and dumped it in the woods.
Cross country. Yeah.
I did. I was doing some four wheeling out
cool.
there.
All right. Well, up next, we'll talk about what I've been doing lately.
All right.
Want great deals on tools that the handy guys recommend? Click on the Our Store button at www.handyguyspodcast.com.
Okay, Brian, so what I've been doing lately is, part of it is more the same, what you've been doing. I did take out my John Deere aerator, did that. I did some overseeding, and it went very well. My grass is great right now. Cool. However, I didn't do anything for the weeds yet. I'm waiting for the first frost to kill a lot of them. I pulled a lot of them where they were in areas where they're really bad. But like,
I'm always wary of using a weed killer at the same time you're putting down
seed. I didn't want to combine the two at all. Now, I do notice that—
Did you do a starter fertilizer when you overseeded?
I didn't. What I did is just put down my fall fertilizer at the same time as overseeding. I had almost all the same—
proportions.
I mean, the starter has a little bit more of other stuff, but this time of year, it doesn't. I mean, you can practically grow grass on cement if you know.
Right.
Although we didn't get much rain, so I really had to water it.
Right.
We've had a dry
that's why I was in a big hurry to get it done this weekend because
we finally got
forecast
rain.
Is for rain for the next 5 days. So.
Anyway, so I don't want to bore everyone with what I've been doing as far as that job goes, but let's talk briefly about a job we did a couple weeks ago together. We volunteer work for a local organization in the area that helps out single teenage moms who need childcare. It's a home or childcare in an old home. What was an old home?
Right,
in
it's like a
local
childcare center, daycare, preschool kind of a thing.
And they had an interesting situation in that. And it sounds so simple, but it took us most of a day.
Yeah, about six, 7 hours
at
I
least.
Think.
And what they needed to do in a lot of these homes, old homes, you have hot water heating systems, which are great. And I had them in my old home. And in those days, when they installed them. And in fact, these may have been the original heating system actually to that building.
Yeah,
and I noticed
it was original, or maybe it was an early add-on.
No, I actually think it was probably original because my house that was built in 1900, I believe. I was told by some HVAC experts that it was the original. That's how they did it.
So we're talking cast iron radiators.
Exactly.
Here. Right.
They would put the pipes in the house, not behind walls. And a lot of that was because they were masonry walls and there was right. no room in the wall to put the pipes. They would leave them exposed. So when you'd have a pipe that would go from your first floor to your second floor, they would just expose them in leave them in a corner exposed. And that was a typical way to install them. Now, the problem was in this particular home over the years is the pipes are exposed in what used to be probably the kitchen. Now, it's not the kitchen any longer, and you have children that are, putting their hands on them.
Yeah.
And it's a child care. And they have insulation on them. And the reason is because they need to get more heat upstairs for whatever reason to balance it. And so you have this insulation on them and kids touching them. And if you don't have the insulation on them, then you have these hot pipes.
Right.
Which is, if it was a steam system, they can really kind of burn you. But hot water, they don't. But they're still hot, and they just don't want to deal with that at all with childcare, and you know how it is.
Yeah,
you got to have everything just right for that, for your inspectors and everyone else. You
know? Right.
And so it was our task to box those pipes in, those old cast iron pipes.
That's right. And, you know, my wife signed us up. Oh, yeah, I'm sure I can get the handy guys to come over. It'd be a quick job. Just build a little box around those pipes.
Now, the problem is, and I took a couple pictures of it with just my camera phone, so they're not quality shots. Maybe we can get them up on the site for this post. But the problem is not the boxing in. That takes some time no matter what. But you want to match the trim. And the trim, of course, is 100 years old roughly. I think 90 years old, something like that. And, of course, that's not something you'll find at the big box store.
Yeah, you can't find that baseboard molding profile. So we boxed it out, just so the listeners know, we boxed it out in drywall. So we essentially bumped out the corner of this room. And then, you know, had to redo the baseboard and everything so that it would match. So simple job building a little teeny wall, drywalling it, mudding it, and then new baseboards around that box.
So let's just talk briefly about how we made the trim match. We bought, obviously, similar pieces of trim. We didn't custom make any trim. For this small job, it would have been crazy to try to have custom-made trim, and we didn't have time. So we bought some trim that was similar, and you also, it was a weird piece. It was kind of a bump out to the baseboard, and it was rounded off. And you found a piece that was similar in size, but it wasn't rounded off. And how do we round it off?
I took the plane to it, the hand plane, and kind of shaved, eased that edge, and then we sanded it to give it that sort of rounded quarter round profile. I could have run it through the router table, something like that, but
we didn't have it available, and we ended up getting pretty darn close.
Yeah.
Once it's all painted up, it should look pretty good. The one thing that you need to be aware of when you're trying to match trim. Well, here's the one thing that I've had to learn over the years. You just got to be creative.
Yeah. I mean, what did we have? We had, three pieces made that profile up, and we had to do a little bit of shimming of it to bring it up the same height. Overall, those baseboards were probably close to, 10 inches tall?
Yeah, they were about 10 inches. Our board wasn't that, but we just made it, and we had a base piece to cover up the difference, and we just had to play around with it, be creative. You actually picked out the pieces, and you were right on the first try, which is uncommon when you're doing that kind of thing.
You know, I drew a picture of it, and with some measurements, and went over to the home center and, you know, spent about a half an hour looking at different profiles and pieces. And, you know, one of them was just a plain, 1x8 piece of poplar, and the other was a...
That was the easy part.
Yeah, that was the easy part. And then, you know, the top cap, something that was kind of close. Fortunately, we didn't have to meet up to another piece of the trim. So this was in a corner all by itself, and the next closest piece of old trim was, 3 feet away on the other side of the doorway.
And we wanted to remove the old trim carefully without disturbing the casing around the doorways, without doing any damage, and we had the right tool for that job.
Yeah, I got the fine MoldiMaster out, and...
That's awesome. I wish I had that in my
old
house.
That was the first time you actually used that tool. So what I did was I just got the right blade on there and handed it to Paul and said, have at it.
And you used it not only to remove the trim, but you used it for sanding a little bit.
Right. I put a little sanding pad on there with a little profile to give that rounded over on the shoe molding.
Right.
And just ran that across there. And then also eased the corners after everything was done and installed. I kind of eased the corners since it was little kids running around and so forth. So I sort of rounded over some of those sharp edges.
So anyway, that's an awesome tool. I've never used it before, but for that kind of work, it was perfect.
Yeah, it comes in very handy when you need it.
All right. Well, that was the first time I've worked with that kind of an old house for quite a while since I moved out on my own. So it was kind of fun to get back to doing that, but I realized how time-consuming it was. Yeah. It took us most of Saturday. So,
yep.
All right. Well, that's what we've been doing lately. If you have more questions for the Handy Guys, be sure to email us, and we will be back most likely next week with another podcast.
Thanks.
See you.
Bye.
The Handy Guys will be back next week. Same handy time, same handy website.